Hanyo Viloyan Dinabaraiso. Omar Rab Yoisi said, Pam Achas Yisi Mehalar Baderach. It happened once that I was walking on the open road. V'nichnasti lechuva achas. And I entered into a ruin. Mechurves Yerushalayim, which was one of the ruins of Jerusalem. I entered there lehispaleo, in order to say the Shmone Esre. Bo Eliyahu Zocholatev. The prophet Eliyahu came, v'shomali ala Pesach, and he waited for me at the entrance of the ruin, at shesiyamti tfilosi, until I finished my prayer of Shmone Esre. Le'achar shesiyamti tfilosi, after I finished my prayer, Omali, Eliyahu said to me, Shalom olecho rabbi, peace be unto thee, my teacher. Ve'omarti lo, and I said to him in return, Shalom olecho rabbi umori, peace be unto thee, my teacher and my instructor. Ve'omali, whereupon Eliyahu Hanavi said to me, Bni, my son, Mipnei ma nichnasto lechu vazu, for what reason did you enter this ruin? Omarti lo, I said to Eliyahu Hanavi in return, Lehispale, I entered this ruin to pray the Shmone Esre. Ve'omali, Eliyahu Hanavi said to me, Hoyoloch lehispale badech, you should have prayed while on the road. Why was it necessary to enter this ruin? Ve'omarti lo, I explained myself to him that the reason I entered the ruin was because misyoreho yisi, I was fearful, shemo yafsiku bi'ovri drochim, that if I would pray on the road, I might be interrupted by passers-by. Ve'omali, to which Eliyahu Hanavi said, hoyoloch lehispalel tfilokzara, if this was your fear, you could have remained on the road and eliminated the possibility of interruption by saying the abbreviated Shmone Esre, which one is permitted to say in case of emergency. Be'ezoshah, at that time, as a result of Eliyahu Hanavi, lomareti mimenu shloisha dvarim, I learned three laws from Eliyahu. Lomareti sheinichnosim lechuva, first I learned that under no circumstances should a person enter into a ruin. Ve'lomareti shemispalim baderach. I also learned that it is permissible to pray the Shmone Esre on the open road. Ve'lomareti. And finally, I learned shahamispalel baderach, that the one who must pray on the open road, mispalel tfilokzoa, may recite the abbreviated form of the Shmone Esre. Ve'omali. Eliyahu continued to question me and said, Bni, my son, ma kol shomato b'chu vazu, what voice did you hear in the ruin while you were praying? Ve'omarti lo, and I said to him, shomati basko, I heard an echo of a heavenly voice, shemenahemes kayono, cooing like a dove. Ve'omeres, and that voice was saying, oi lebonim, woe to children, Sheba Avoneseim, because of whose sins, Hechrafti as Beisi, I destroyed my house, meaning the Beis Hamikdash, Veisorafti as Hecholi, and I burned my abode, the Holy of Holies, Vehiglisim Levenomes, and I exiled the children among the nations. Veomali, Eliyahu said to me, Chayecho Vechayereshcho, by your life and the life of your head. Lo shozu bilvado merezkach. The echo you heard was not a one-time occurrence which you happened to hear at that particular moment, ela b'chol yeim v'yeim, but rather every day, day in and day out. Sholosh pe'omim merezkach. This echo is repeated three times. Velo izu bilvad. And not only these three times, Elo b'sho she Yisrael nichnosim lebotei kneisiyos ubotei medrashos, but whenever Jewish people enter their houses of worship or houses of learning to pray or to study, the Onin Yehei Shmo HaGodol Mevorach, and they respond to the Kaddish, saying, may his great name be blessed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be he, Menanea Berosho, nods his head, as it were, the Omer, and says, Ashrei HaMelech Shemikal Shun Loi Beveseikach, happy is the king who is praised in his house in this manner. Maloy Le'av, what is there for the father, Shehiglo Azbonov, who dispersed his children? V'oy lehem labonim, and woe to the children, Shegolu me'al shulchan avim, who were exiled from their father's table. Before continuing with the Gemara, I wish to elaborate on the portion we have just learned. In the story of Reb Yossi, we will note that Eliyahu Hanovi, in his greeting, referred to Reb Yossi as Rebbe, my teacher. Reb Yossi, on the other hand, addressed Eliyahu as Rabbi Umori, my teacher and my instructor. Thereupon, Eliyahu dropped the title of Rabbi, and thereafter called Reb Yossi Bni, my son. There is an apparent atmosphere of mystery surrounding this portion of the Agudah. First, one may ask, of what relevance to us is it that Eliyahu Hanovi and Reb Yossi exchange greetings? Suffice it for Reb Yossi to begin with Eliyahu's question, why did you enter the ruin? Secondly, Eliyahu, who was one of the greatest prophets in the early years of the first Beis Hamikdash, was granted eternal life, as is described in Kings 2, chapter 2. The Talmud relates that some of our Talmudic sages had the privilege of being visited by Eliyahu and learning Torah from him by virtue of their piety and scholarship. Rabbi Yossi was one of those privileged few. We may therefore wonder, why then did Eliyahu refer to Rabbi Yossi as my teacher? We may also question why Rabbi Yossi, when acknowledging Eliyahu's greeting, called him my teacher and my instructor. Finally, after having referred to Rabbi Yossi for some reason as Rebbe, why did Eliyahu Hanovi suddenly change and call him my son thereafter? To answer these questions, let us first define the distinction between the two terms, Rabbi and Mori. Rabbi refers to one who teaches laws which are handed down from generation to generation. Mori refers to one who renders decision of halacha in new problems which may arise. When Eliyahu saw Rabbi Yossi in the ruin, he interpreted as meaning that Rabbi Yossi had been taught that it is permissible to enter ruins. He therefore referred to Rabbi Yossi as my teacher, implying that Rabbi Yossi was teaching him a new law. Rabbi Yossi's answer was that it was not his intention to teach a law, and that he considers Eliyahu as both his teacher and his instructor. Thereupon, Eliyahu referred to Rabbi Yossi as my son, since a student is considered by our Talmudical sages as a son, and taught him the three laws. Says the Gemara, Tonu Rabbonon, our sages taught in the Beraisa, Mipnei Shloisha Dvarim, because of three reasons, Einich Nosim Lechurba, entry into a ruin is prohibited. Mipnei Chshad, one reason is that he may arouse suspicion that his presence in the ruin is for immoral purposes. Mipnei Hamapolis, a second reason is because of the danger of falling debris. Mipnei Hamazikin, the third reason is because of the possible presence of destroying spirits known as shading. In other words, the prohibition of entering a ruin is based on moral, physical, and spiritual reasons. The Gemara now questions why the Beraisa finds it necessary to mention three separate reasons. We learned in the Beraisa, Chshat, because of suspicion, questions the Gemara. V'tipeklei mishum apoilus, it should be prohibited because of the danger of falling debris, even without the reason of suspicion. Answers the Gemara, Becharete, in the case of a new ruin, where there is no danger of falling debris, because the walls are still strong, we need the reason of suspicion to prohibit entry. Questions the Gemara further, V'tipi klei mishum azikin. Although the danger of falling debris is eliminated when the ruin is new, we still do not need the reason of suspicion, since we have the reason of destroying spirits. Answers the Gemara, betray. In the case of two people desiring to enter a new ruin, we need the reason of suspicion, since in the presence of two people, the danger of mazikim is absent, and since the ruin is new, there is no danger of falling debris. Questions the Gemara again. E betray. If the case is of two people entering a ruin, chshad namaleke, then there should be no reason for suspicion, because one hesitates to perform immoral acts in the presence of another. Answers the Gemara. Betray upritzi. The Beraisa discusses the case of two people of loose morals, where the presence of one is no safeguard of the moral propriety of the other. Having shown that the reason of suspicion must be mentioned, since there is a case where the other reasons do not apply, the Gemara now asks, why do we need the reason of Mipnei Hamapoles? And the Gemara questions, Mipnei Hamapoles, because of falling debris, V'tipa klei mishum chshad umazikin, let us derive the prohibition to enter a ruin from the reasons of suspicion and mazikim. Answers the Gemara, there is a case where only the reason of falling debris applies, which is betray uksheri. Two people of upright character desiring to enter an old ruin. Since there are two, there is no fear of mazikim, and there are no grounds of suspicion. Having shown the necessity for the reasons of suspicion and falling debris, the Gemara now continues to question the necessity for the third reason, mipnei hamazikin. Questions the Gemara, mipnei hamazikin, because of destroying spirits, v'tipeklei mipnei chshad umapeles. What case is there for which the reasons of suspicion and falling debris do not apply? Answers the Gemara, bechurva chareti, betray uksheri. In the case of two decent people entering a new ruin, questions the Gemara, I betray mazikin namaleke. In the case of two, the reason of shadim likewise do not apply, as the Gemara mentioned previously. Answers the Gemara, Bim koimon haishinen. In the place where the presence of shadim was previously established, their danger exists even for two people. Veiboisemo, another answer can be given, lo oilom bechat. The Beraisa discusses the case of one person entering alone, ubechur vacharati, and he enters into a new ruin where there is no danger of falling debris. Dekoye bedabra. This ruin is located in a field away from the city. Dehosom mishum chshad leke, in which case there is no cause for suspicion. Deho isho bedabro leke, since the presence of a woman there is not common. Umishum mazikin ike, but the danger of destroying spirits does exist, since he is alone. Having discussed the reasons for which a person may not enter a ruin and the situations to which they apply, we can now gain a better understanding of the discussion that took place between Eliyahu Hanovi and Rabbi Yossi, and at the same time gain a fuller and better appreciation of the meaningful content of every word uttered by our sages. One may wonder, what was Rabbi Yossi's justification for entering the ruin? Description: we can see that all three reasons for prohibition could apply in his case. He mentions that Hoyisi Mehalech, I was walking, indicating that he was alone. Then he says Baderech, on the road and not in the field. And finally, he says Mechur Vois Yerushalayim, the ruins of Jerusalem, indicating that he was near the city and that the ruin was not a new one, since Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans well before Rabbi Yossi's time. Rabbi Yossi's emphasis of these facts is ample proof of his awareness of the prohibition and its reasons. For otherwise, these facts are irrelevant, and Rabbi Yossi would not mention them. Why then did he enter alone into an old ruin situated near a city? The answer to this question is that Rabbi Yossi was of the opinion that one may not daven on the open road for fear of interruption. The mitzvah of davening Shemoneh Esrei, therefore, required his entering the ruin. Since his entry was motivated by a mitzvah, he no longer had reason to fear injury from falling debris and shading, because as King Solomon states in Koheles, chapter 8, verse 5, Shomer mitzvah lo yeda dovaro, the fulfillment of a mitzvah will cause no ill effects. And though this does not apply in the case of definite danger, it may be relied on in the case of a ruin, where the danger is of a more remote nature. Now, since Rabbi Yossi's opinion was that entry into the ruin was permitted for the sake of davening, the third reason, that of suspicion, was automatically eliminated, because suspicion is aroused only if there is no apparent motive. But in the case of Rabbi Yossi, the motive was quite apparent. He therefore entered the ruin to daven. But when Eliyahu Hanovi informed Rabbi Yossi that one is permitted to daven on the open road, the fulfillment of the mitzvah of davening did not require entry into the ruin. And if one does enter, the mitzvah then cannot protect him. Eliyahu Hanovi therefore asked him, "Why did you enter this ruin?" Because even in the case of davening, all three reasons do apply. Tonu Rabbanon, our sages taught in Nebaraisa, Alba Mishmores Havi Halailo. The night consists of four Mishmoros, four watches. Divrei Rebbe. So said Rabbeinu HaKodesh. Rabbi Yonon says, Shalosh, three. The night consists only of three watches. The Gemara now seeks the source from which Rebbe and Rabbi Nosson based their opinion as to the number of watches into which the night is divided. Questions the Gemara, my taimo de Rabbi Nosson, what is the reason of Rabbi Nosson in stating that the night is divided into three watches? Answers the Gemara, diksiv, for it is written in Judges chapter 7, verse 19, Vayovo Gidon Umeyo Ish Asher Ito, and Gidon and the 100 men who were with him came Bikzo Hamachne to the edge of the camp, Rosh Hashmores Hatichoino, at the beginning of the middle watch, Tone, and we learned in a Beraisa that Ein Tichono Elo Sheyesh Lefoneho Uleachreo. The term middle is applied only to something which is preceded by one and followed by one. Since the verse refers to the middle watch, it indicates the existence of one watch preceding it and one following it, for a total of three watches. Questions the Gemara, the Rebbe, how does Rebbe interpret this verse so as not to contradict his opinion that the night consists of four watches? Answers the Gemara, my tichoino achas shebe tichoinis. Rebbe will interpret middle as meaning one of the two middle watches. Questions the Gemara, by Rabbi Nosson, how then can Rabbi Nosson prove his opinion from this verse if it lends itself to Rebbe's interpretation. Answers the Gemara, Rabbi Nosson proof follows because Mitziv Tichono Shebi Tichonus. Does the verse say one of the middle ones? Tichono Ksiv. The verse says the middle one. So Rabbi Nosson derives from this verse that there are only three mishmoros, three watches. Questions the Gemara. My time of the Rebbe. What is Rebbe's proof that the night consists of four watches? Omar Rabbi Zriko, Omar Rabbi Amo, Omar Rabbi Yeshua Balevi, answered Rabbi Zriko in the name of Rabbi Ami, who in turn quoted from Rabbi Yeshua Balevi. Rabbi bases his opinion on two verses in Psalms. Kosu Vechodemer, King David states in Psalm 119, verse 62, Chatzos Laila Okum Lehedeis Loch, at midnight do I rise to thank thee, Al Mishpatei Tzidkecho, for thy righteous laws. Vekosu Vechodemer, while in another verse, in the same psalm, he states, Kidmu Einai Ashmores, my eyes preceded the watches to discuss thy laws. Hoketzah, how is it possible that by awaking at midnight, King David preceded Mishmoros, watches, meaning at least two, Abba Mishmoros, Hove Alaylo. The only way it is possible is if the night is divided into four watches. Questions the Gemara by Rabbi Nosson. How does Rabbi Nosson explain these verses? Answers the Gemara. Sova lo ki Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Nosson shares the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua. This none, as we learned in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yeshua Imer. Rabbi Yeshua says that the final time for reading the morning Shema, which is to be read uvekumecho, when thou risest up, ad sholei shois, is until the third hour of the day. Although most people rise earlier, shekein derech melochim lamoid b'sholei shois, since it is the custom of kings to awake at that hour. By awaking at midnight, King David preceded other kings by 8 hours. Shid delelio, the 6 remaining hours of the night, they tarted the Yomama, and the first 2 hours of the day. Together, these comprise 2 4-hour watches. Rabashi Omar, Rabashi answers that Rabbi Nosson is not contradicted by these verses, because Mishmoro Upalgo Name Mishmoris Korelu. A watch and a half may also be referred to in the plural Mishmoros. Although this passage of the Gemara deals with the interpretation of a verse and would appear to have no practical applications, yet it is characteristic of the depth of the Talmud that a seemingly insignificant passage contains great principles applicable in daily life. As we know, the law requires that the hamotzi at the Shabbos meals be made on lechem mishneh, literally double bread. We therefore place 2 challos on the Shabbos table for every meal. This law is based on the fact that the manna, which was the Jews' sustenance in the desert after their exodus from Egypt, fell in double portions on Friday for the Shabbos. A question arises whether a challah and a half may be considered as lechem mishneh. The point in question is whether mishneh denotes 2 whole loaves, in which case 1 and a half are not enough, or whether the meaning of mishneh is more than one, so that 1 and a half suffice. Judging superficially, one may conclude from this Gemara that 1 and a half challos may be considered as lechem mishneh, just as 1 and a half watches according to Rav Ashi, are referred to in the plural. But upon closer analysis, we find a distinction between the two cases. For there is a difference between the term two and the use of the plural. Two or double denotes two complete things, while plural or many refers to more than one. In the case of watches, the verse mentions the plural, mishmores. Hence, it may be interpreted as meaning one and a half. However, when discussing the Shabbos bread, the Torah uses the word double, lechem mishne, double bread. Thus, the meaning is two whole loaves. As proof of this distinction, we find a similar law in the Mishnah in Baba Basra, that if the signatures of witnesses on a contract are removed two lines from the text, the contract is rendered void. Yet the Gemara states that if the signatures of the witnesses are removed only a line and a half, the document is valid, because the Mishnah mentions the term two. From this we conclude that specifically mentioning the number two excludes one and a half, and therefore we cannot make the hamotzi on one and a half loaves on the Shabbos.